That would be news from the booth.
News from the booth. Well, I mean, I work in the development department, and so I've been going through the past few days of creating an annual fundraising plan and helping to put together like a strategy for people to come in and be able to work with me on making sure that KBOO is a cool, sustainable place. And that's been going on. I've been making lots of applications. We got the drive coming up. And so, you know, you listening out there who are, you know, you consider yourself like a listener or part of the station and you have a stake in the survival of KBOO, this is a great time to, you know, pitch in and do your part as well. So starting on April 19th, you'll have an opportunity to be able to be a part of this community in a way that like is central to what we do. So
hey, if you're not a member, become a member. And I hope to see you all this weekend, and maybe I will see you all at the Grassroots Radio Conference.
Yeah, and also like you may already have it, but we are running a drawing for anybody who donates to KBOO right now, so you have a chance to win some really cool prizes. We've got a trip to Bucerías, Mexico, so if you like that tropical stuff, we also have we have a gift certificate for an amazing dispensary here in town.
Okay.
And then we have a gift certificate to Mississippi Records, so I mean, like, you know, in getting all that stuff together, it totally like appeals to my sensibilities, but I have to hope that at least one or two of you out there also share those sensibilities of being warm, being medicated, and also listening to music.
Oh man, yeah. good music, good weather, and good food, and some medicine, you know, that's all good stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, thank you for listening to KBOO people, and thank you for coming down.
Absolutely.
Becky, and we will see y'all around and in the community. Peace.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6:01. Right to Survive Radio is coming up next.
KBOO is celebrating 50 years of broadcasting and the many people who are part of KBOO's history.
I came down to the Salmon Street Studios, where the federal courthouse is. The first official home of KBOO.
Came into this rather bizarre situation where we were in the basement of an attorney's office.
And at that meeting, he said, well, I'm just going to let you know that when your lease is up in about 18 months, we will not renew your lease. We will extend it for up to 6 months at double the rent.
When I was hired, they said, we want to be on the air by the end of July. I went, whoa, how much money do we have to pull this off? And they said, we got $11,000. how are we going to build this facility with $11,000?
To hear the stories of people who helped make KBOO what it is today, go to 50yearsofkboo.fm and click on KBOO Stories Project.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Bright Moments, with the Camas High School Choir on Friday, April 13th at 6:30 p.m. at the Portland Institute of Contemporary Art in Portland. This concert is a collaboration of the Camas High School Choir, indie rock musician Kelly Pratt, and young audiences of Oregon and Southwest Washington. The concert is an original hour-long performance for a rock band, horns, and 200 high school singers, blending together a wide array of styles and genres. Again, that's Bright Moments with the Camas High School Choir on Friday, April 13th at 6:30 p.m. at the Portland Institute of Contemporary Art, 15 Northeast Hancock Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm, on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Check.
Welcome to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm here in the studio today co-hosting with Ibrahim Mubarak and Jeff Litico. My name is Lisa Fay. Welcome, and I hope you'll tune in for the full hour.
Yes, this is a very unique show. We at Right to Survive and KBOO try to get some witnesses that watched the fatal shooting of a person that was having mental issues at City Team, and I guess they still going to trauma impact class. I don't know. They didn't make it, but we thank Jeff Litico for coming in. So we would like to have a discussion, and if you want to be in on that discussion, you can call us at 503-231-8187. We want to hear your opinion, and we want to talk about, is the houseless community safer in shelters or on the streets, and where's the police accountability in the houseless community? Okay, Jeff.
Well, when people are in shelters, they're on the street as well, so the question is just whether or not people are safe and whether or not they're safe from the police. And obviously, they're not really that safe from the police. On an ongoing, besides the shootings and things like that, just on an ongoing basis, the homeless are subjected to constant stress, never knowing whether or not their few meager belongings have been taken away by the city government. So, which, you know, people may not fully grasp what that means, but when you have that type of stress day in and day out and don't know whether or not you're going to be wet or cold or lacking all of your personal hygiene stuff and the rest, it shaves days off, it shaves time off your life ultimately. So no, whether people are on the streets or in shelters, they're not safe.
Okay. We have a call in right now. We thank you for that intro, Jeff, and we want to discuss that and talk about what you mean, what you just said later, but let's go to the caller. Okay, caller. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Caller, we can hear background noise. What's your name? Okay.
I guess the caller would call back, or you can call, whoever's listening. The topic is the homeless community safer on the streets or in shelters, and where's the police accountability in the houseless community? Jeff, you mentioned about staying in the shelter and living on the street is basically the same thing. However, I mean, you're on the street, you're in your own, like, domain where you sleep in your own sleeping bag, in your own tent, or in a cubbyhole by yourself and not with a bunch of people. But when you're in a shelter, they make you take TB shots, and you're in there with people that may have the flu or cold or something. And so the safety of it is the concern. And also, what safety that you have, the differences or the sameness in the streets and the shelters, what you think?
Well, I mean, it's a half dozen of one, half dozen of another. people that are in the shelters, quote unquote, they're also not in the shelters on any given night because the shelters sometimes fill up, or a person isn't able to make the deadline time to check in. And so for those people that are regularly going to shelters, they end up having to sleep in doorways, which is probably, I don't know, less safe than having your own tent or tarp structure type thing. so I don't know. I mean, it's not a very safe planet.
That's what and, you say. And the planet all, is not
and for,
safe.
For every one of us, shelter, for every yeah. one of us, it eventually ends badly. the question is, what is the quality of life? And for any number of reasons that we could list off, the homeless have diminished quality of life. That unnecessarily diminished. For one, citizens constantly gawking at the homeless just makes you feel like there's something wrong with you, and that adds to stress as well.
Okay, we have a caller on. So.
Caller, how are you doing tonight?
Good.
Sure. What's your question?
And your name, you want to state it. You don't have to.
Oh, I'm going to say my name. My name, it's Keiki, by the way. I'm calling.
Okay.
Well, hello, Keiki. What's your question?
Or your concern.
Okay. Okay, so my concern is about the shooting of the homeless man that I was reading about this online. And I do have my opinions about how the police could have handled that situation better instead of taking someone's life with some bullets.
Mm-hmm.
For what I got and for what I saw and from the footage, and as a photographer and as a videographer that travels a lot, and, you know, there are ways to prevent tragedy and suffering. And one of those ways is to, instead of, like, pulling out a weapon on someone that has mental health, it's always good to talk to the individual. But in the footage and in the video, you do not absolutely see any of the policemen trying to calm the man down, trying to talk with him. What you hear is police telling everyone else to move out the way, guns are drawn, threaten the man. And for someone that has actually have mental health issues, okay, that puts that mental health individual in a very unstable state where they have flashbacks or they will have some type of mental flashback or something they don't want to re-experience ever again. And that happens. But why were bullets used to subdue a man that was actually stabbing himself, for one? And why did they not use tasers instead of bullets to subdue the man and put him into a place where he can no longer harm himself? I just don't understand why the Portland police there in Portland, Oregon, decided that the best way to deal with this situation is to kill a person that is actually trying to kill himself.
Absolutely. I mean, how on God's green earth, 8 fully grown, supposedly well-trained, professional officers can't manage some other outcome in such a short amount of time than to kill a person dead? I mean, I understand why police will sometimes act with what appears to be an unreasonable and escalatory amount of violence, force. Because if for example, they're trying to put you into a car and you resist, they can rinse their back and go on disability, maybe lose their job. Their kid doesn't get to go to college. So I understand a certain amount of over-response to them having to face those types of risks day after day after day. But in these situations, with these types of shootings, and this isn't the first time, and it's not going to be the last time, not unless people really get out there and do something to communicate to Ted Wheeler and the rest of them that it is unacceptable. As I wasn't there, but as I understand it, they shot within a very short amount of time. And like you said, there was no discussion. And that's just, dead is dead. And so, go ahead.
But this is the thing. The man was already in a corner,
yes,
surrounded by,
yes,
policemen.
Yes.
And there's no negotiators whatsoever. There's no one that is there to help this man. But here's the thing. People say
they've shot people in the back that are going away from them.
Yes.
It strikes me as cowardly. I would be embarrassed if I were them.
Okay. So the thing we want to make clear, that Right to Survive in KBOO, we don't know if the guy was houseless or he rented a houseless shelter.
It doesn't matter, but
we just want to say that that for the record, we don't want to spread malicious gossip or anything false. So we want to say they shot a person in a house.
So it would be malicious. Yeah. It would be malicious if he was homeless or he wasn't homeless and he got described as homeless. And that's the same thing as citizens gawking at people.
Okay.
It doesn't. So as far as homelessness goes, it doesn't matter. And one has thin walls, tarps. One has thick walls. And there are people that are on the street that have more money than people that are in apartments or even houses. What the problem is grinding poverty, is extreme poverty. And that's what accounts for a lot of the mental health problems that people have, and certainly a lot of the lack of care that people have in relation to their mental health problems.
So wouldn't you think
that's what Portland lacks?
Exactly. So wouldn't you think that they would call the fire department, because they are trained to deal with extreme.
Well, they have a police
thing, and the police are trained to shoot and kill, as we've seen. Cause that's all what they showing me. They trained to shoot and kill, ask questions after you did, and whatever. Wouldn't the fire department be more feasible to call on a person that's having mental issues, because they know how to talk to people? I think
certainly on an ongoing basis. If you're having a mental health crisis, which do you want coming towards you? You know, rapidly. Do you want a police officer coming towards you, or would you rather have a fireman coming towards you?
Well, I'd rather have a fireman with a water hose. I may need to take a shower.
Cause you to have a serious problem. The Portland Police Department does also, though, have, since they under a federal court dictate. For dealing improperly with mentally people that have mental health challenges, have a special unit in the police department that's trained to deal specifically with people that have mental health issues.
Where were they?
Unfortunately, they only operate Tuesday through Friday. Yeah.
Really? Don't have a crisis any other day.
Yeah, so we're going to tell people not to have a mental crisis from Tuesdays to Wednesdays.
Well, we're not going to be able to tell the fellow that died at City Teams.
When the police department does a background check before they pursue a suspect, they have all the information they need. Person suffering from mental health issues is there on their record. It is there listed saying that this person has mental health issues. Please be cautious. Please make sure you take the steps before executing. And as a policeman, you should be able to take those steps very cautiously before pulling out your weapon.
Yeah, now, they were interacting with him all day long.
Right.
They had a number of different calls. They lost him, or they managed to lose track of him.
He escaped.
And they called Cascadia, but how is an underfunded social service agency that's understaffed supposed to be able to respond to a situation like that as well? But they were clearly knowledgeable that this person was having a mental health problem and that he's plugged into the mental health systems. And still, they drew their guns and shot within seconds.
Thank you.
And say that he actually broke in. This is just what I, as a videographer and as a photographer and as a documentarian, that the place that these individuals stay at for $5 a night at this individual place. Now, there's an AA meeting going on. For order him to actually go into this place or break into this place, someone would have to allow him to come into the AA meeting. AA meeting. You just can't just barge through a door and it's wide open while there's an AA meeting. From what I'm understanding, those doors are locked during certain hours when they're doing AA meetings or doing some type of program. I don't feel that how the media portrayed him as a villain when he wasn't a villain. He's a victim, not a villain. He's a victim.
Well,
so why is it...
According to... the news reports, he had, during his mental break, stolen or carjacked a person and then wrecked their vehicle. And that's why the police pursued them into the shelter.
So now that we know that this guy did some damage and ran into, I guess, the shelter where the house, the shelter, where they was having
there were various reports. What somebody calls a carjacking may not be what everybody calls a carjacking.
Of course. So let's get back to the topic, you know, where, you know, the houseless people go to AA. Housed people go to AA. The president should go to AA, whatever. I mean, he need to do something with himself. So these people are going here, and you're trying to get your life together. All of a sudden, here come the police, come in with guns. Was that strategically arranged where you have all these people that's going to the shelter because they say, oh, it's safer in here than sleeping on the streets, but then here you go, you got to shoot. And where's the trauma care? When it's a shooting in schools or at a bank or at a business, they come in and give those people trauma care. I heard that the police the next day was passing out pizza and donuts or something. I'm one of the donuts with sprinkles. I don't know. So, did anyone hear that story or wonder if they sent trauma care to those houseless people that was utilizing the shelter as a safe place?
Nope. I don't think so.
And I've never heard that there was any threat or anybody at City Team that felt in any way endangered by the person that was having the mental health issues.
I don't think that we're thinking about the man that had been shot where the men of the shelter felt threatened by him. We're thinking more in terms of utilizing the shelter and for services, for sleep, for food, for whatever, and the police barging in with their guns cocked and firing their weapons into an area that they utilize as a safe space.
Yeah. So.
So we're talking about the trauma
and the safe space that's supposed to be. Yeah. So this guy knew that was a shelter because it's a restaurant that stay open 24 hours across the street. Then it's a bar, and then you got other stores and stuff. So he must have felt it was safe to go in that shelter where they could negotiate, talk to him, take him to jail or something. And when they wouldn't talk to him, he started cutting himself. I can't put myself in his mind. But he didn't deserve to get shot like that. If the shelter, so if that was, let's go to someone's house, would the police would have came and shot up like that, like they did in that shelter? And that's the point I'm trying to bring. Would they have acted different if it wasn't a houseless shelter? Where people supposed to feel safe.
Good point.
Been on the street. And that's the point I'm trying to make.
Another, I think they would have acted differently if that was another location. I believe the police, if that was the Purr district, they would have acted differently.
And if he was black, he wouldn't have made it inside any building.
Another incident in Southeast Portland recently, a man who was having a mental health crisis was running around in a neighborhood shooting off
an air gun,
which looked like a real gun or bullet gun, and frightened neighbors to the point where they were crawling on their floors to get away from their front rooms and calling the police. Now, the police caught up with the guy and didn't shoot him. Why didn't they shoot him?
Was it in a houseless community they caught him, or what?
He had a gun, he had a weapon.
On a different day, they shot a person that had a Pez dispenser.
That's true.
they wanted strawberry flavor and not great.
The problem is these police are apparently walking around afraid of the community that they're supposed to be protecting and serving. And that needs to be fundamentally changed. And probably part of the reason that they're afraid of the community that they're supposed to be protecting and serving is because they do such a lousy job of it.
503-231-8187 is the call-in number. If you have a concern, a question, or an answer to our concerns or questions, please call Right to Survive at KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial at 503-231-8187.
So, Jeff, have you witnessed in the area that you stay certain officers that are on patrol harassing the houseless people or targeting select people more than others?
So at a certain point, the city was sued by people that were camping and their belongings were taken from them, and the city ultimately settles out of court. But as a part of that decision or ruling or whatever it was, the city was forced to develop a process by which they were supposed to keep account of people's possessions when they take them. And that taking people's possessions is the police department's primary favored modus operandi for harassing the homeless. Because it wipes a person out when all of your belongings suddenly disappear. And so it doesn't, I mean, it's, do individual police officers harass or harass some more than others? No, they just have a blanket, ingrained, institutional imperative that rolls out automatically day after day, week after week, in which they harass the homeless.
Yes, they do, because they get bored, and then it's like, okay, now let's go to a nice neighborhood.
Well, you know, I'm not so sure. I think a lot of them would actually, frankly, rather not be involved at all. Now, on the one hand, some do have the attitude that says, well, if the citizens want us to be, you know, all sorts of respectful to the homeless, well, then we should just let them camp willy-nilly in their front yards. Is that what they want? So some do have a belief that their policing process is something that the citizens do want, or at least should want. But that's a limited number of police officers, I think, that have that attitude. I think most of them have an attitude that they'd rather just not deal with it. But citizens are constantly picking up their phones and making complaints. And some of it's legitimate in the sense that sometimes the homeless make certain, you know, make a mess, and it's visible. And it does, you know, you notice this doesn't happen up in the Southwest Hills. It happens mostly down in Southeast Portland, which, the citizens that are picking up the phone to complain ought to be picking up the phone to complain to the mayor to, you know, target a different neighborhood and change some of those dynamics. But.
So 503-231-8187, call in at KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial, and you listen to Right to Survive Radio. And we'll be back with you after this.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Alright, you listen to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And we're having a roundtable discussion with you, a participating audience. Call in at 503-231-8187. And we're here with Lisa Faye and Jeff Litico, and we did have Keke on the phone.
So as far as the messes that some of the homeless end up making, the apparent visible trash sites that you sometimes see, for starters, the when you see that trash, it's not really the homeless's trash. That's stuff that's you know, property materials, garbage that's been temporarily diverted from the waste stream. It's all pretty much been picked up from regular citizens and are just momentarily out of, we see a little bit of trash around homeless camps. If we were to see the mountains of trash that regular citizens create, it'd make you vomit. But that's all nicely, neatly tucked away. And then the finger gets pointed at the homeless for making a mess. And I can understand, too, why homeless people begin to not take care of their property as well as they might. When the police are going to come in and take your stuff and follow that up with a work crew that then cleans everything, then you're going to be tempted to just let your garbage be picked up by that team that's going to come through. So it provides an incentive. And also just a general attitude towards property as a general rule. When your belongings are stolen by the police, stolen by other people, trashed by citizens, you begin to develop an attitude that says, I don't care that much about whatever it is that I have because I don't really have anything.
And with that, we have another caller on the line. Caller, who am I speaking to tonight?
This is Mark.
Hey,
hello, Mark.
Mark.
How you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm enjoying your program. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to address the police violence. As it turns out, I agree wholeheartedly that what we've witnessed across the nation is certainly cowardice on the police part. And also that the system really can't be reformed. I believe that it's going to take a new paradigm in terms of community safety. But I brought this point up that I'm going to make here to City Council and in front of some of the Cop Watch organizations. And I don't believe that there is anything such as suicide by cop. I believe that it's murder in general. But as long as the concept of suicide by cop is something that is a possibility, then we've got problems, and that a police officer should be trained to not fear for his life, to be, you know, if they're going to be a militant warrior, then they have to have the respect of that, I suppose, and pony up with a bunch of courage and be able to discern a situation such that they won't take a person's life.
Yeah, I mean,
agree.
Navy. So, as I understand it, there's a standard of 21 feet or 21 yards, something like that, that begins to give the distance that police think when there's a knife that they can then respond with a gun. But that but it's not to be taken as a kill zone. Anyone within 21 feet of them, they can shoot if they think they have a knife. I mean, maybe if a person threw the knife at them, but it wasn't even that. This is not an instance of suicide by cop. I'm sure that this person was not in any way threatening them with his knife.
Yeah, and that is a situation that has happened before where certainly someone with a mental crisis has been shot just probably because of appearances or whatever.
Well, he clearly didn't threaten them the first time they saw him or the second time they got a call about him. They had all day to feel threatened by this person. They didn't feel threatened until they found him in a homeless shelter. And so the paradigm definitely needs to change, as you were saying. But in the meantime, people might give Mayor Wheeler a call at 503-823-4000 and tell him to do something different with his police officers. They don't need to be acting the way that they do. They need to man up a little bit. And it's a risky job that they have. They signed up for that job. Yeah. It does not give them the right to shoot people in the back, shoot people with Pez dispensers, or shoot people that are having a bad mental health day.
As it turns out, when I was a young kid, I played guns with sticks, you know, and even at that, it was illegal to shoot somebody in the back.
Are you talking about zip guns? You telling your age. So you listen to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial, and our topic is police accountability in a houseless community, and is it safer to be in a shelter or on the street? Call us at 503-231-8187.
And thank you for our last two callers. We have a third caller on the line. Caller, are you out there?
Yeah. Hi. Hi, this is Debbie. This is Desiree. How are you?
Hey, Desiree.
Hey, Desiree. We're doing how great. Are you?
Enjoying the liquid sunshine, huh?
yeah, right. Yeah, such an important conversation. I'm glad you're having it. I just have to say that, you know, it was just so disturbing that they shot that man, and I couldn't help but think of the shooting of Jose Mejia Putt.
Yes, for a nickel. You're right, better believe it.
Yeah, 20 cents short on his bus fare, and, you know, he's beaten, traumatized, ends up at, you know, one of the mental health facilities and is shot while he's being held there. So that, you know, brought back memories of that. And, you know, having worked in shelters in Seattle back in the 80s, you know, if somebody was having a mental health crisis, you called the mental health professionals. And, you know, somebody went there and de-escalated. And the idea that Portland still doesn't have, you know, full-time, 24-hour mental health professionals who are on hand in order to deal with this kind of situation in a humane way, I think is absolutely obscene. And, you know, no more money for police. Let's put the money into mental health professionals until Portland Police's record of, you know, violence against people and mental health crises, you know, is fundamentally ends, right? I just want to mention, too, that, you know, Portland is apparently about to commission on April 21st this $2 billion, you know, USS Portland, which is going to be sitting in Portland's harbor. And, you know, the mayor is, you know, supportive of this, and all these different local businesses are supporting this. It's going to be some great big ceremonial thing. And, you know, what can be done with $2 billion in Portland, you know, to bring about genuine, you know, universal housing for everybody who needs it? I mean, it's just obscene that in a city with this level of wealth, we've got people on the street at all.
With that money, every single houseless person in this state can be housed, and I can upgrade my apartment with that much money too. So we thank you for your comment. But the thing I want to know is, should we call the fire department instead of police when a houseless person is having mental issues? That's the question.
Yeah, I mean, that makes some sense in the short term, you know, until we have some other better institutional protocol for dealing with it. But yeah, under these circumstances and given the record of the Portland police, you know, it just does not make sense to call the police.
I know how John Elifritz would feel about it.
Yeah, they form an absolute threat to, you know, people in mental health crises. So anyway, thanks you guys. Thanks for everything you do.
Thank you, Desiree.
Thank you, Desiree.
Bye.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. And I believe we have another caller on the line. Caller, how are you tonight?
Good. I'm doing great. How are you?
We're doing nice.
And what's your name, caller?
My name's Roberts.
Hey, Robert. How are you doing?
Good.
Right. Where's your question?
Well, I just don't have a question. I just wanted to say that I've heard about the issue of this homeless person getting shot, and I ran into my neighbor who actually ran into this guy the night that he got shot. And I mean, this person is someone who had mental illness, and he confronted my neighbor in a violent fashion, and you know, so my neighbor was very shocked to hear about this person eventually you know, getting killed by police the next day. He looked at his image on the internet and said, "That's the guy that I ran into." And you know, so he told me the whole story, and he was glad that he didn't let this guy, you know, open the door to his house.
Yes.
When this guy knocked on his door, and you know, this person had serious mental illness.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else to say, but I just wanted to call in and let you guys know that I heard about this.
Yeah, we appreciate it. But do you know, see, right now it's a toss-up that if this guy was houseless or not, or was he houseless off and on, or he just suffered from mental issues. But never the case, nobody need to be shot like that, especially with his back to the wall and he's cutting himself. He don't need to be disposed of the way he was that day. So, you're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM, 503-231-8187 is the call-in number. And I believe we have another call-in. So, caller, what's your name if you want to give it? If you don't, address your concerns or questions or answer.
Hi, my name's Charlotte.
Hey, Charlotte.
And, I really appreciate you having this conversation. I'm on my way home from work, and I pulled off the road to listen. And after this happened, there was a lot of conversation in my circle of friends, and turned out somebody knew him. And the big thing for me, because there's a lot of points made by other callers and you and everything, but I think that the police officers that shot this man, you know, at pretty much close range, because it's inside a room, and there were rifles. I guess there were several rifles, and their policy or whatever is to where there's really only supposed to be one, and you don't even need to draw your rifle in that situation anyway. But what I don't understand is why these cops didn't, if they're going to shoot someone, which is crazy that they even did that, but why didn't they take a knee out? Or, you know,
exactly. They're supposed to be professionals. So apparently their target training was not the type of target training that
they must proper. Be like just horrible, like their marksmanship skills, you know. Yeah.
Unless they, of course, were shooting to kill.
They were exactly shooting to kill. Exactly.
And then I hear a dog in the background on the video also.
And that's just so wrong.
You know, and there's proof there, and then witnesses, and an AA meeting. You know, people like trying to better their life, and it takes a lot just to go to those meetings.
I don't care if they decide that it was a justifiable shooting. They should still be put off the force for purposefully shooting to kill, because there's no way around but that is the case in this instance, and there's no justification for that.
Exactly, and I think their mental health needs to be addressed, because there is something wrong in the minds of those men. That how many times was he shot? 10, 11?
I think it was 8. I'm not sure. I don't know the count. 1 is enough, to tell you the truth. 1 is enough. So, yes.
All right, caller. Thank you for your call, and thank you for pulling over and listening to us. We're going to take a short recess here in a minute or so, and then we will come back and join the discussion. You want to give the call-in number one more time?
The call, you're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And the call-in number is 503-231-8187. And our topic is it safer for a houseless person to be in a shelter or on the street? And where's the police accountability? Let's talk about that, the accountability of the police in the community, when we come back. Thank you.
Like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. You're listening to Right to Survive Radio, where we give voice to the houseless community. Our phone number here is 503-231-8187, and we're having a lively discussion on police accountability within the houseless community. I understand we have another caller on the line. Caller, what is your name?
My name's Michelle.
Hey, Michelle.
Hey, Michelle.
How you
doing? Good.
What is your question or comment or concern tonight?
Yeah, so I really appreciate your conversation you guys are having as well. I think it's really important, and I too have pulled over so I can chime in.
Thank you.
In my short 35 years on the planet so far, I've worked a lot in the Portland area. I've worked with Central City Concern for some years, which is a nonprofit that works to house homeless folks, houseless folks. And I've also worked in a lot of crisis group homes for mental health and mental illness. So I've gotten some good, you know, doses of exposure and perspective from that. And I just don't understand. I also have a brother that just graduated from the police academy.
Oh.
So I have that, you know, perspective as well. And as much as I really, you know, want my brother to be safe, and I know he's putting his life on the line every day as an officer moving forward, really, as I was working in the crisis group home, our lives we're putting on the line is supposed to be to protect these people that are being harmed. And, you know, our well-being needs to come second to that. When I had a client, you know, the community and the client safety came before mine. And I had training, you know, not only to de-escalate, but when someone is self-injuring, like it sounds like this person was, I would never be in my right mind. I would be fired and in all kinds of trouble if I ever did anything except to help the person stop self-harming. And there's even ways that we need to stop a person self-harming and are trained to do so without, you know, bruising them even. Like, we're careful to help them stop that kind of self-harm going on, you know, without adding to it. And so this is so far removed from that. And I think that police training and trauma-informed have a lot to do with it. I think if all of our police were trained more like mental health professionals, we could close that gap. And in the meantime, I wouldn't call them. I would definitely go to fire, you know, rescue folks first.
Thank you very much, Michelle. So you say that we work for Central City Concern and a lot of other places. And do you think that the police, by being in the street, should know the difference between somebody that's sleep deprived, coming down off of drugs, or have mental issues, because their furtive actions and movements are similar? And if you think they know that, they can help adjust the situation that they come across, instead of letting us know the person. The thing to do is to get rid of people with mental health, is to fill them up with 8 to 12 bullets. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is really easily recognizable because, again, I haven't been in the professional field very long, mm-hmm. training, and I feel like I could spot that pretty well to discern. There's always indicators, and if you're paying attention and if you're pausing to think, you know, if they would use any of those other tactics such as cover and talk, you know, to de-escalate the person, to call in the right reinforcements. Like the caller said before, to if they have to shoot rather than tase, to shoot a leg or something.
Yes.
Or does it always have to be a shot to kill? So I think it goes back to that root mentality where, you know, even if we do train officers to be trauma-informed, they need to take those tools that they're given and use them. Otherwise, they're not using any of that training. They didn't use any of those other tactics and strategies that they easily could have. And they easily, like you said, have been, you know, in and out with the guy all day. They were well informed. It's on all their reports. They knew he was mentally ill. They anyone could see that someone cutting themselves is in
crisis.
And it's a self, you know, they're not lunging out at you, and you have plenty of people on your, you know, supporting you, that no one is really at risk or at threat of getting hurt. It's more about helping the person. But like you guys said early on, they're trained to shoot first and think later. And when it goes to the, you know, the judges to decide on rulings, they give the officers their immunity. They say, okay, yeah, if you're ever, you know, fearing your life for whatever reason, even if that's based on something that is out of ignorance or out of lack of training or out of unconscious bias going on, you know, they're operating out of that, and they're being told by the highest, you know, courts that that's okay, basically, because they're being, you know, they're being allowed and almost encouraged to shoot first and think later. So that's the mentality going on that really has to change.
Exactly. Thank you, Michelle. And we go on to another break. You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And I call the number 503-231-8187. And we're going to go to music, and we'll come right back and talk about accountability of the police in the houseless community.
See the lonely man there on the corner. What he's waiting for, I don't know. But he waits every day now. He's just waiting for someone to show. And nobody knows him. And nobody cares. Cause there's no hiding place. There's no
Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO. I'm one of your hosts, Lisa Fay, and I'm here with Ibrahim Mubarak, and the station number is 90.7 FM on your radio dial. The call-in number for tonight's show is 503-231-8187, and we have a caller on the line. Hello, caller.
Hello. Caller, are you there?
Oh, yep, I am here. Okay. Hello?
Thank you.
Yep, no problem. So, yeah, my name is Manny. How you
hey,
guys doing?
Manny.
Hey,
how
Manny.
Doing?
How you doing? So, yeah, I wanted to address the situation of what's going on. It blew my mind, first off, that, you know, someone was with mental problems was shot dead. And I just wanted to bring up the part of don't cops have rubber bullets for situations like this? And, they could have easily, in the situation, you know, if it came to it, you know, the first thing is not to kill someone. You
exactly.
know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
They could have shot this man with rubber bullets, and, you know, he would have easily gone down. I'm sure rubber bullets hurt, you know, and he would have got down, and they could have got him the help that he, you know, needed. And especially with the hours that were involved in this, there was no need to go in this situation like this man was armed up, about to shoot up the place or something. There was no need for it. And I just wanted to give that input out there.
Well, they say we are creatures of habits, and one thing a lot of people, humans, do that don't haven't come to terms with their aggression is lash out physically and stuff. So if the police was dealing with this guy, they probably was frustrated with him and forgot to put the rubber bullets in, I think. I don't know. I don't want to give him my outlet.
I'm just saying there was no one, you know, that, you know, decided that, oh, hey, you know, let's shoot this guy with some rubber bullets.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand it. But you guys have a great show, and thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you much.
Thank you, Manny. Thank you for calling
Now, Jeff, you here, you've been, I guess, and you still living on the streets of Portland. And we want to talk about the accountability. I mean, does this type of things happen, the unseen things happen in the houseless community where police not held accountable for doing things to the houseless people or with the houseless people, you know?
Well, I'm sure. But as far as what I was talking about before, people taking the belongings, it's not the police themselves that do that. They have other people that they contract out to, and there's supposed to be accountability, but there isn't, because for the most part, homeless people don't complain. They don't make because they're used to their complaints being ignored. So whether they're victimized by other citizens, they don't make a police report. They don't dial 911 as a general rule. And so, yeah, you know, the police operate with basic carte blanche in relation to the homeless.
So all this trauma that's going on in a houseless community, you would think that on Obamacare or Medicaid or Medicare, whatever medical they getting because they living on the street, they would have trauma care provisions in there for them.
It's amazing to me how many people that even when folks are on food stamps, which as I understand it comes automatically with the healthcare, so many people are not accessing the programs that they could be accessing.
Do they know about them? I mean, when I was getting food stamps, you just go in and turn in the paper and say, hey, I'm houseless, uh-huh. I'm living on the street, I need to get burritos so I can nuke them so I can fill my stomach up right. and get full.
And then even people that are, I mean, so I'm hard pressed to name the causalities because I think it differs from person to person,
yes.
but there is a worn outedness that I think homeless people experience of just constant frustration and not being able to do anything or you know, set any goals and have those goals be achieved, that they give up. So even when they're on the program, they don't go to the doctor like they should. So there's that.
I hear we have another caller on the line. Caller, what's your name and
address your concerns?
Hi, my name is Everett. I've actually been listening sort of off and on for the last through the show. What I've heard several callers express dismay that the police seem to shoot. Not trying to shoot to not to kill. People seem to be unaware that police are specifically trained in Portland, and I think generally in the country, to shoot to kill.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
That years ago, I was at some kind of community meeting, I think sponsored by the city, where there were police and community members there, and they explicitly told us that they explicitly are trained to shoot to kill. Yes, if they use rubber bullets, then they're making an extra preparation for something else, or tasers and so forth. But their normal procedure is if they pull out their gun and they fire it, they're intending to shoot, and they shoot for the center of the body. They don't want to wound somebody. They specifically are trained to shoot to kill. And to me, that's an issue that people should say, well, okay, train the cops to do that, but train them also that when they have time, they can evaluate the situation and they can take other measures other than shooting to kill. But people seem to be so unaware of how cops are trained that people don't, it's not even an issue of public discussion.
Right.
So then you don't have officer friendly anymore. You got officer scary. Huh?
There's a rap for I don't recall exactly, but they have a rap that justifies their shoot to kill training process, the bullets ricocheting, or I don't recall what it is, but I think you're absolutely right. Give the police a little more discretion, and give them a choice when to look for an opportunity not to have to shoot to kill, and train them accordingly.
But how much discretion do you need? A man backed up in a corner cutting himself and not harming nobody. So is that the discretion to kill, or discretion to harm, the wound, or what?
The discretion to use a little bit of discernment in a situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, but I do think I think part of the training should be that they don't have to shoot and they don't have to shoot to kill.
Exactly.
Yes, that may be the initial training, but they also should be trained to evaluate situations, mm-hmm. to de-escalate. All those things should be included in the training.
Or they could be shifted to nothing but rubber bullets. I mean, England does it just fine.
Yeah. Well,
or tasers. What was wrong with the taser? I haven't heard nobody mention about using the taser.
Four of the officers that were involved in this shooting have previously come to public notice for their bad interactions with people that have mental health issues and/or homeless, or both. And one of them, he tasered a person that tasered a person 15 times.
Oh my goodness.
Or six times within 15 seconds. Yeah, that's it.
Oh wow.
Yeah, something like that.
And isn't one of them the one that shot Aaron Campbell, one of them, somebody there? I haven't heard that. I'm not sure if that's true. But the accountability in a houseless community, where do the houseless people go when police interact with them wrongly? Again, there's no more officer friendly anymore. So what happens? Where's the accountability?
Okay, I want to thank our guest, Jeff Litico, and our callers, Keiki, Mark, Desiree, Robert, Charlotte, Michelle, Manny, and Everett, for calling in tonight to Right to Survive Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. Sorry, we have a TV show that will be airing soon on Open Signal, so stay tuned.
Are you in trauma over this hearing about the shootings or what?
I am in total trauma.
So we want to give those houseless people that witness that trauma care. We don't want to give them pizza and donut. Oh, I'm traumatic. Give me a pizza so I can think about, you know, what I saw for the rest of my life. Come on.
We want some
real trauma care for the houseless community and accountability of the police actions.
Portland to Detroit. Indeed. I let the music raise funds for community centers. Start a high school that is soon to be finished. I'm thinking about starting a community garden. Trillions on the wall while the poor people are starving. Music is a tool in the hands of the artist. Do the right thing and it makes you a target. When the pigs murder the innocent and walk scot-free, we gotta occupy the property and block the street. I'm in the intersection between love and liberation, indoctrination and occupation. I demand a response to this emergency, so the government is conscious of insurgency. So much work to do, so few jobs to find. The financial sector loots and robs you blind. Politicians and puppets and the Pope protects predators. The paper's propaganda projected by the enemy.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
You're listening to KBO Portland.